It all connects. The girl who walks for hours to bring home the family's water. The school she can't attend most days. The breakfast she didn't have. The rain that hasn't fallen in months. The danger around the next bend. Her little brother's belly laugh. Her mother's hug. Her dreams of being a teacher, an engineer, the mayor. All the reasons life is both so hard and so beautiful. It all connects. But so do we, for children's sakes. At Child Fund, we connect through everything we do, together, so every child can grow up healthy, educated, and safe. Because we need each other. Learn more at childfund.org.
Pollution from trucks is a public health crisis. Diesel-burning trucks belch dangerous levels of pollution, and communities living near ports and along freight corridors breathe especially high levels of this dirty air. But this crisis has a solution. My name is Sasan Sadat, and I work for Earth Justice. I'm working to clean up our air quality, particularly for communities that bear the burden of diesel pollution. For the sake of our lungs, our health, and our climate, the future of trucking in this country has got to be zero emissions. Until then, I will never rest.
Earth Justice is a national legal nonprofit defending the environment and people's health. Earth Justice is fighting to save lives, protect our climate, and strengthen our economy through the shift to zero emissions. If clean air matters to you, visit us at earthjustice.org. Earth Justice, because the earth needs a good lawyer.
You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home for the Midwest Farm Report with me, Pam Yonke.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy with drizzle tonight and lows in the mid-30s. Some sprinkles or drizzle tomorrow morning, mostly cloudy tomorrow afternoon, high mid-40s. Partly sunny, breezy, and highs in the low 50s Sunday. It stays dry to start next week as temps warm. It's 39 right now.
Maggie Dawn.
It's Sound Off Monday on the Maggie Dawn Show. Join me and Tom Paulsiewicz as we dig into the big news of the weekend, including Governor Evers declaring a state of emergency in response to the shutdown.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. The Todd Albaugh Show.
Let's say you have a couple who's about to get married. You get them a gift at the wedding shower. You get them a gift at the wedding. You get them a gift at the baby shower. If they buy a house, you get them a housewarming gift.
I have never been married. I doubt I ever will be. What do? You just say, I'm going to celebrate my singlehood. Bring me a gift. Brett Brown Deere says, Todd, you don't get a gift for not getting married because you already won by staying single.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app, The Maggie Dawn Show.
I am joined by attorney Robert Howell. He felt compelled to go to Broadview outside of the ICE facility there and protest.
Everybody wants gang members who are non-citizens who've committed violent crime to be arrested, prosecuted, or deported. But that is not what's happening in Chicago. Federal agents decided to open that gate and literally march into the protesters rather than use the other exit. I was arrested. I hadn't committed a crime.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
I wouldn't get on this program with all of you fine folks every day and talk about how to do that through voting and through speaking out. I'm here with you every day.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
What are you doing as an elected official? You have no business in an elected office.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Thank you for having me.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Friday afternoon, one and all. Well, the shutdown's reached a full month. I believe it's like day 31. And apparently the only thing that can save MAGA from itself appears to be the federal courts, ladies and gentlemen. Government has created whatever system it may be, in all instances, to preserve the health, welfare, and safety of the public. That is the only legitimate function of government. And the Trump administration, despite guidance from its own general counsel's office in the Office of Management and Budget, which I describe as the Death Star of the White House, this is the office run by Russ Vogt, that office, run by Darth Vader himself, Russ Vogt, their general counsel in May said, if you've got a government shutdown, congressional intent is so clear that there's no question that Congress has intended for SNAP benefits to remain funded and that you can use the billions of contingency fund dollars that were allocated to the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program. That came out of the Trump administration's own lawyers in May. By earlier this month, they had deleted that guidance and had invented new guidance that said, oh, we can't possibly fund this essential food benefit that feeds some 42 million Americans. So yesterday we had shared with you that a federal judge in Massachusetts, in the case brought nearly entirely by state's attorney general, all Democratic attorneys general, had indicated that she found that the administration's newfangled, situationally derived, I want to leverage people's hunger to try to force Democrats to fund the government. That judge had said pretty clearly in a hearing yesterday that that legal interpretation was unsound. I'm very happy to be joined for the first hour of today's program by former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. He is that fine program that you can hear every Saturday called Amicus, a law review, from 9 to 11 across the network. Welcome back, Jim. It's great to have you with us this afternoon.
Maggie, honored as always, and to chat about, as you said, what the federal judiciary, the continuing bulwarks, the guardrails for the crazy coming out of Washington continues to do its job. Again, coming out of these two judges just earlier today and yesterday. Thank goodness we have people like Indira Talwani. She is a judge in Massachusetts who said, Congress has put money in an emergency fund. It's hard for me to understand how this isn't an emergency when there's no money and a lot of people are needing their SNAP benefits. Gosh, Maggie, common sense, right?
Yes.
And language that follows that as well. Refreshing. And now we see what the Trump administration does with that.
There's some very interesting wrinkles in Judge Talwani's approach. Again, that is coming out of the district court in Massachusetts. At the same time, there was another lawsuit that was filed in Rhode Island by a different group of plaintiffs about the same precise issue, that in fact, it's not optional for the federal government to continue to fund SNAP, that it is indeed a mandate, and that congressional intent makes this perfectly clear, and that that mandate supersedes any government shutdown, that there are numerous tools available to the federal government to ensure that SNAP benefits continue to get paid. We're going to dig into that, but I just wanted to set the stage here because Representative Clay Higgins, this guy is a far right wing nut, Clay Higgins, he is a Republican representative. If you read some of what this guy says on social media, it's pretty shocking. And here's what, folks. Clay Higgins is a congressman from Louisiana. Which state, pray tell, Jim, my special guest this hour, which state do you think has the highest percentage of people getting SNAP benefits?
Gosh, would that be a state that starts with Lou and ends at Anna, right?
Yes, right. Louisiana, if not the top, it is one of the top by percentage of population states where their folks get SNAP benefits. This is what Representative Higgins posted on X yesterday. First of all, the man doesn't even possess mastery of the facts. He says there are 22 million American households receiving SNAP benefits for groceries. That's actually a low number. The estimates are it's 42 million people. Query exactly how that breaks down by household. But he says there are 22 million American households receiving SNAP benefits for groceries. At $4,200 per year on average, try to get your head wrapped around how many pantries you can stock with $4,200 in properly shopped groceries. Any American who has been receiving $4,200 per year of free groceries and does not have at least 1 month of groceries stocked should never again receive SNAP because, wow, stop smoking crack. That is what this administration thinks about people who struggle with food insecurity, that it's basically your fault and screw you. By the way, average monthly household SNAP benefits is around $356 per month. According to Donald Trump's own U.S. Department of Agriculture, it costs about $1,000 a month to feed a family of four. The average family gets about $80 per week. This is not enough to feed a family of four. It's so gross, but it is so emblematic of the disdain for working white families, but especially the dog whistle that is being employed there to basically invoke all kinds of racist ideology that has been until, you know, the last, I'd say, near about like 2016, passé in the Republican Party, but which now they just explicitly embrace and hug unrepentantly. Yeah, if you receive SNAP and you don't have enough food, even though we're going to not pay the benefits, meaning Republicans aren't going to pay the benefits, they control Congress, they could just pass a clean bill to do just that, nothing else, but they won't. You should never receive SNAP benefits because you're smoking crack. But lovely. Thank you, Representative Higgins, who absolutely has no business being in elected office. It's the tone here from the MAGA movement is just ridiculous.
And the dog whistle, Maggie, as you said, is unmistakable. This is a program that began in 1939, obviously redone over the years to make it more efficient, more effective, reaching the appropriate audiences. So many testimonials coming out today revealing who the folks are who are receiving SNAP benefits. They're not in the category of the people that this congressman describes. They're people who are making their way, who are employed, who are raising families, who again, need to place food on the table. It's just that simple. And as Judge Talwani said yesterday, do you want people to die? Is that what the intent is here? Is that really it? We're talking about basic nutrition, basic food for what is still the wealthiest country in the world, and we can't do this? It is shocking. And that kind of language only makes the situation worse.
Well, and his choice of crack, mm-hmm. right? Like the drug addiction epidemic in this country right now are opioids. It is heroin. Right. It is which was perpetrated by criminals that wear white jackets and $5,000 suits, none of which ever spent a day in jail. I don't know. Do you think Representative Clay Higgins is directing his ire at poor white West Virginians or Tennesseans or Ohioans that are addicted to heroin because their doctors years ago prescribed a painkiller at amounts that would lead nearly almost anybody who takes those prescription drugs to become addicted? Is he saying that people that struggle with the disease of addiction, a thing that every single family in this country has someone that they know and care about, that you deserve to die of starvation? That's what it sounds like. But of course, what he's talking about is, again, trying to demonize people based on race. That's what he's doing. It's disgusting. It should be something that should be disqualifying for anybody that holds elected office. Cindy from Appleton texting in on the text line says, and this, the party of family values.
Yes, Yes.
Couldn't agree with you more.
Folks, raising children. Let's have more children in America, but let's not feed them.
But let them starve. Let's let them starve. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. You can get in on the action just like Cindy has this afternoon. I just want to grab some of the language. The judge out of Rhode Island, John McConnell, did not issue a written decision. He gave his decision orally from the bench today. And here is some of the language from Judge McConnell just earlier this afternoon. This decision came down around 1 o'clock our time here in the Midwest. There is no doubt that the $6 billion in contingency funds are appropriated funds that are without a doubt necessary to carry out the program's operation. The shutdown of the government through funding doesn't do away with SNAP. It just does away with the funding of it. There could be no greater necessity than the prohibition across the board of funds for the program's operation. There's no doubt, and it is beyond argument, that irreparable harm will begin to occur if it hasn't occurred in the terror that it has caused some people about the availability of funding for food for their family. It's clear that when compared to the millions of people that will go without funds for food versus the agency's desire not to use contingency funds in case there's maybe a hurricane need, the balances of those equities clearly goes on the side of ensuring that people are fed. Duh.
Common sense, right? Don't have to be a lawyer, don't have to be a judge to figure that out. He does figure it out. And thank goodness we've got those people saying those things. If only the Speaker of the House of Representatives, who's also from Louisiana, that same
correct.
State, if only he were to listen to that and say, you know what, maybe we need to do this. I've got some larger missions here. But he's not. He's doubling down.
As is Steve Scalise, the majority leader from Louisiana. We've got Joe from Madison on the line. Joe, say hello to Jim. And what do you have for us this afternoon?
Hey, Joe.
Hi, YouTube. Great show, as always. I want to spend just a few minutes on math and SNAP, okay? Because Mr. Higgins is banding about this number. And let's break it down. Let's do basic math here. So we're talking about a family of four having $350 a month for food. Okay, we're getting down to $80 a week for food for mom, dad, and two kids. All right, so let's break it down by a meal. You're talking about $288 per person a day. So where does that get you? You know, a burger, a bun, and an apple. Meanwhile, Mr. Higgins gets $79 a day per diem. $79 compared to what these people are getting. Who's owed more? I would say the mom, dad, and the two kids. Thanks.
Thanks, Joe. His per diem, $79, but for you, sarcasm and racism, but no food. Stay tuned. It's the Civic Media Radio Network.
News from the center, WRCE.
Don't act like that. Don't wear that. Don't think that. I've heard everything you tell yourself every time you felt different, and I want you to know that you can be vulnerable and powerful. That taking care of your mind is taking care of everyone you love and who loves you. Love your mind. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Tom Hartman here. Democracy is not a spectator sport, so join me each and every weekday right here on Civic Media for the Tom Hartman program from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Covering the news of the day and sharing ways for you to get off the sidelines and get active in your community, because change starts with you. Get involved and tune in to the Tom Hartman program Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on your local Civic Media radio station.
This is Robert Pilot, host of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we talk about Native issues like treaties, protecting Mother Earth, and holding our elected officials accountable. You'll also hear from Turtle Island voices like Arvina Martin, State Representative Heather Keeler, Ruth Anna Buffalo, Dr. Anthony Stately, State Senator Mary Kunish, Robert Lilligren, and Bob Blake. Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station. Daylight saving time ends this weekend. Turn your clocks back 1 hour and take the extra time to replace the batteries in your smoke detectors, too. A message from your local Civic Media radio station.
are the National Park Foundation. And together with you, we're creating a future where every person, every generation, gets their chance at an unforgettable moment. Learn more at nationalparks.org/foundation.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm with former U.S. Attorney James Santel for the first hour of today's program. We are talking about two courts in two different federal districts today, nearly simultaneously, issuing orders to the Trump administration that have slightly different procedural postures that said you have to fund the SNAP, you have to fund the SNAP benefits. What's really interesting about what Judge Talwani did is that she didn't actually issue a typical sort of TRO or an injunction or something like that. She issued basically a decision today that laid out her reasoning that the plaintiffs in the Massachusetts case, which are mostly state attorneys general, are likely to succeed on their on the merits of their claims, that there is clearly irreparable harm. I can't think of any clearer irreparable harm, except maybe in a death penalty case, than people going hungry. And she gives the federal government until Monday to tell her how they're going to move forward now that she's clarified for them that the way that they decided just a couple weeks ago to differently read statutes is incorrect. So now that I've explained this all to you, tell me how you're going to take my ruling and fund these benefits before attempting to issue some sort of further directive order. I think it's a very interesting posture. It gives the administration the opportunity. Okay, we've had now two federal courts that have said we're reading this wrong, that we can fund these benefits. There's no legal impediment. She actually goes through some other fund transfer analysis, which was used in other circumstances by the Trump administration that did not include SNAP. She said, yeah, you know, just how you move money around for the WIC program, you can use that same statutory authority to fund SNAP. And yes, you can spend the contingency appropriations, these many $5-6 billion. Pretty interesting. It's like, hey, I'm telling you, you can do the right thing here. So do the right thing. I think it's also an attempt to open the door to let the Trump administration, again, simply do the right thing and not appeal the ruling, Jim. I thought this was pretty slick on her part. Did you get the same impression? And again, I thought it's a fairly short decision. We'll post it in our show notes today for everybody to read themselves. But she's pretty clear. She goes through the statutory analysis, the congressional intent, all that. She talks about this other funding mechanism. She's so tell me how you're going to do this now that I've made it clear. I thought it was pretty creative.
There's some judicial savvy here. Yes, when I first read it, I had the same reaction you did, which is you and I are used to being told by judges, just do things, Ms. Dawn, make it happen and report back to me on this, because we're part of that executive portion of things, how to get things done. Here, I think there is some maybe just sort of genius to this, which is not only does she require them to come back, which maybe forces them over the weekend to do some real soul searching about this, but it also kind of keeps it in her bailiwick. Come back and tell me how you're going to do this. And if there's anything about what you're describing here that's not consistent with my interpretation of the law, I'll let you know it. And then after we've agreed on that, or even if we haven't agreed on it, I have to tell you what the mechanism is. Then you go do the fine point, the analysis, the mechanics of making this happen, loading the cards, doing all those kinds of things. But it does have some small genius to it in terms of making this happen. And not that Donald Trump at all cares about, well, he does care a lot about public image, but not on this kind of thing, just the opposite. It also gives them an opportunity to say, yes, we're not trying to keep people from going hungry, and we're working with the system, and here's what we've come up with. And maybe gives them some talking points to get out from under this otherwise disastrous public relations thing, which this also could very already is.
I mean, I don't think Trump or Mike Johnson or any of these MAGA folks are at all convinced it's a public relations disaster. They're playing to the base. It's, again, literally they are playing the race card. It's this permeating idea that if you're black or brown, you don't deserve. You are presumptively suspect. You presumptively are unworthy of any kind of help, despite the fact that the majority, the largest demographic that receives SNAP benefits is white people, to be very clear about it. I also thought it was interesting, and again, in Judge Talwani's decision, which we will post in our show notes today, you can find those at civicmedia.us/show notes, so you can read it yourself. She points out that at least through September 30th, the U.S. Department of Agriculture itself agreed with her interpretation of statute. She quotes this guidance that I have been quoting and referring to, again, that came originally from the General Counsel's office at the OMB and that was posted on the USDA's own website saying, yep, you've got to fund the SNAP benefits. It's interesting she doesn't get into why that disappeared, but more on that in a moment. I want to share a text message. Jeannie from Waterloo shares this on her text line. Many years ago, I relied on food stamps when I became a single parent. I had two daughters to raise, and I had been a stay-at-home mom for most of that time. Eventually, I did find work and went back to college. Since then, I've been a contributing member of society, taking care of individuals with special needs. I don't understand what the Republicans are doing. It breaks my heart. I was raised by very progressive parents who taught me a lot about democracy and the importance of being involved. I can't believe what's happening in our country right now. Thank you so very much, Jeannie, for sharing that. I think people need to hear the stories of folks that have received benefits in the past or do now. They are the people that we know and love and care about. If you hear my voice, there is someone that you know that receives a SNAP benefit. We're going to continue this discussion. There is a big decision that just dropped from the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals related to the tactics being used by Customs and Border Patrol in these mass deportation raids. It's a bit of a puzzler, in my opinion, given the fact that we know the administration lies all the time in legal filings these days. Stay tuned. We discuss that next with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke here. You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home of the Midwest Farm Report.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. As Saturday arrives, more than 40 million Americans who rely on federal food assistance will not get the payments they rely on. A judge ordering the Trump administration to use emergency funds to continue SNAP payments. The White House says they plan to appeal. Air traffic controllers not getting paid during the shutdown, many calling in sick. Staff shortages are getting critical. ABC's Sam Sweeney covers transportation.
Right now, we are at a critical staffing level across the country. And if this government shutdown doesn't end or they don't find a way to pay these air traffic controllers, it is only going to get worse, which means more delays and more cancellations.
Horrific satellite images illustrating the mass killing by a Sudanese rebel group in Darfur, blood and bodies visible from space. The FBI says it thwarted a potential Halloween weekend terrorist attack in Michigan tied to a foreign terrorist organization. This is ABC News.
It's the Bucks and the Kings. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA. The Bucks at home this evening against the Kings. Milwaukee 4-1. Sacramento just 1-4. The Bucks coming off that win over Golden State Thursday night, 120-110. Giannis was out with a sore knee, so guard Ryan Rollins stepped up, scoring 32 points, a new career high. Doc Rivers:
he's just tough. You know, he's a tough kid, man. And we got a team full of like tough guys, like. you know, resilient, maybe is a better word.
Rollins asked, what was it like playing defense against Golden State's Steph Curry?
It was nice. It was fun, man. That's probably the best way I could put it. It was fun just being able to, you know, just coming out with the win and just bumping with him.
A setback, though, for Bucks guard Kevin Porter Jr. He had been out with an ankle injury, and then he suffered a knee injury during a practice, doing damage to his meniscus. It's going to require minor surgery and is expected to be out now at least 4 weeks. With Sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Charlie Sheen has had his struggles on many fronts, but the 2.5 Men star is honest when it comes to not getting one particular role. Sheen and Oliver Stone had talked about him playing Ron Kovic in Born on the 4th of July, and Sheen pretty much thought it was a done deal. But after not hearing from Stone for a while, he heard from his brother Emilio Estevez that Tom Cruise ended up with the role. Sheen said at the time he felt betrayed when he heard the news, and especially when Stone said he thought Sheen had lost interest. Sheen made a point of saying they didn't talk after making a handshake deal for him to play Kovic. Charlie Sheen appears to have no ill will towards Stone these days and praised Cruise's performance as Kovic, adding that he felt it was an Oscar-worthy performance. Cruise was nominated for an Oscar but lost the Best Actor award to the amazing Daniel Day-Lewis. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Start your day with me, Pam Yonke, every morning with the Midwest Farm Report, right here on 107.7 WRCE.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy with drizzle tonight and lows in the mid-30s. Some sprinkles or drizzle tomorrow morning, mostly cloudy tomorrow afternoon, high mid-40s. Partly sunny, breezy, and highs in the low 50s Sunday. It stays dry to start next week as temps warm. It's 39 right now.
Listen to the Civic Media exclusive podcast, Busted Pencils.
I mean, that comes naturally for me, Jacob, as a blue-collar scholar. I really love knowing, hey, what are the skills I need to complete the job? And how can I be the very best? I really think that we owe it to the next generation. And I don't even mean just young people, but anybody thinking about, hey, I'm going to change my career pathway. I think we owe it to them to say, well, here are the experts in your industry.
Subscribe to Busted Pencils wherever you listen to podcasts.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
What is your favorite or least favorite word? Cinnamon. Love that word. And it's a superfood. I don't like the word buttress just because I'm immature. Con.
My favorite word is scoundrel. I would also say buttocks.
I said buttress and you said buttocks. John in Madison says words with silent letters bug me too. Pneumonia. Dumb. Funny because my name is John.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, a recap of all the weekend news with Civic Media's news director, Sholly Pittman. Special announcement coming up in hour number two. I hope you can join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined for the first hour by former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. We've got a very special guest as well coming up at 5 o'clock. His name is Yuri Rashkin. He was born in Russia, moved to the United States. He's currently a Rock County Board Supervisor, and he hosts his own commentating program on YouTube. He speaks frequently about the Russia-Ukraine war. We're going to be getting his thoughts on the current state of affairs abroad at 5 p.m. Can't wait to talk with Yuri. That's going to be super interesting. But I promise to share with you some breaking news related to the use of force, specifically the use of rubber bullets, tear gas, pepper balls in the Customs and Border Patrol agency's mass deportation raids that have been occurring in and around Chicago. You will recall that last week, a federal appeals court had ordered that Border Patrol Commander-at-Large Greg Bovino had to appear daily in her courtroom to provide a report about their use of force. She didn't come to that decision easily or right away. She came to that decision when there were credible allegations and evidence presented by plaintiffs in that lawsuit over the deployment of National Guards troops in Illinois, as well as challenges to the particular use of force that is being used by some federal agents in executing these mass deportation raids, after there was evidence that they had violated her prior court orders, that Customs and Border Patrol, ICE, and other federal agents were not, as the judge in that case had required, alerting protesters that they were about to deploy these crowd control mechanisms. A mechanism sounds a little mild here. That they had not been giving people sufficient time to retreat. Again, these were all things that the judge had tried to take great pains to be very clear about prior in prior orders. Again, she was confronted with evidence that they weren't complying with things. That Mr. Bovino himself, in one piece of footage that the judge reviewed, had actually lobbed a tear gas grenade in a residential neighborhood where children were within an hour about to start in some kind of Halloween trick-or-treating sort of parade. Bunch of cars, people walking around, walking their dogs, and here's Bovino lobbing tear gas without following the court's order to warn people that you were going to do so before employing, again, these tactics for so-called crowd control. It was in light of those facts, in light of apparently flagrant violations of the court's order, that she had ordered Commander Bovino to appear in her courtroom at 6 o'clock every day to review their use of force. In the face of government lawyers and high-ranking officials flouting court orders, misrepresenting facts to courts, this would seem to me to be a pretty reasonable thing to do. I need you to come in every day and tell me what's happening, since I can't trust you to follow my stinking orders. But folks, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals just ruled yesterday and then clarified today that he does not have to do this. That doing so, in other words, showing up every day as Judge Ellis wanted to require Commander Bovino to do, would place the judge, quote, in the position of an inquisitor rather than that of a neutral adjudicator of a dispute or a neutral adjudicator of facts. Jim, I wanted to get your take on this because this sounds, I'm just going to call it out, like a bunch of legal mumbo jumbo. Yeah, what right. The hell is, quote, an inquisitor? Right. Isn't a judge an inquisitor? Yes, judges inquire into facts all of the time, especially as it relates to whether or not the government is following pre-existing court orders. I don't know what the hell the difference between, right, quote, an inquisitor of facts rather than a neutral adjudicator of facts.
It's precisely what judges do. You got it right spot on here, Maggie. And this is a situation where you've got Judge Ellis who says, you know what, as you've indicated, if you're not going to follow, apparently not going to follow my directives, I'm once again going to give you the forum to come in to tell me what's going on so I can keep you on the straight and narrow. So many people have asked you and me and others, you know, in the wake of things that have happened in other districts where the judges go nuts, they find the government in contempt, and they say, so what? What does contempt mean? Well, here you've got Judge Ellis who can find the Bovinos of the world in contempt, but she's doing the practical thing, and she's saying, okay, a finding of contempt, which you are in for practical purposes,
yeah,
is real, but I'm also going to enforce, I'm going to go beyond that. I'm going to make this real. I'm going to call you in on a regular basis to not so much work with you, but to ensure that you're in compliance, not in an inquisitor. This is not some sort of inappropriate pursuit of something untoward. The other aspect that strikes me from the very time that Judge Ellis began to articulate these standards, you and I both know this, she is not articulating anything that is not a part of routine training and practice for legitimate law enforcement throughout the country in every single place, Chicago, Wisconsin, anywhere you go, this notion of working in a way that is protective of the safety and security of the crowds that you're there to provide security for, not engaging in behavior that's going to harm people, all of those kinds of things, not hurling or hurling tear gas into crowds, not using automobiles, all these kinds of things. It's standard practice. She's not articulating anything new. What she's doing is saying, we've got to be sure that on the streets of Chicago, we are following what American law enforcement has always been expected and required to do. And now, to give my orders some force and some teeth, I'm going to ensure this being done. And not just label it some contempt and then throw up our arms and do nothing.
Contempt without
that.
Teeth. I mean,
right.
It's so bizarre that here the Seventh Circuit went further and said that Judge Ellis's order, quote, sets up the court as a supervisor of Bovino's activities, intruding into personnel management decisions of the executive branch. These two problems are related and lead us to conclude that the order infringes on the separation of powers. Where the hell is the requirement for the federal government and Chief Bovino to follow the judiciary's valid court orders?
Right.
If you've got an executive branch agency and top-level officials that will misrepresent facts and flout court orders and your contempt orders do nothing, it's like, we're through the looking glass, up is down, and the Seventh Circuit seems to not understand or want to grapple with the fact that you have federal law enforcement officers not following court orders, not following their oath. They can disagree with the order. Yep, there's an appeals process for that. This is ridiculous. There was evidence, multiple instances, numerous filings that the plaintiffs had to keep bringing into Judge Ellis's courtroom. Here he's not following the order here and throwing tear gas without warning. Here, and even in that instance, even with the warning, it would have been inappropriate. Her orders also made clear some circumstances that would limit the deployment of these things, which if you've got someone that's vulnerable, someone who's disabled, elderly, has breathing problems, could precipitate death for certain individuals. It seems to me that the Seventh Circuit has lost the thread here, and that is the disrespect for the third branch of government, the Article III judiciary. Ooh, Jim, are you there?
I am back. For some reason, the gremlins got inside the system. And
it is Halloween, my friend.
I don't think it was tear gas, but thankfully, just away for just a moment or so. And, you know, Maggie, as I listen not only to your recitation, but also look at the Seventh Circuit language, you can't help but think that this is written off of the same tablet as the Department of Justice submitted to the Seventh Circuit. It's reminiscent of that same sort of language, which is, this is beyond the scope of a judge. We know that the Department of Justice generally has said that these judges do not have power to intrude into our authority. It strikes me as very, very similar, if not completely, simply duplicating the pablum coming from the Justice Department about what a judge can and cannot do. This judge is not getting involved in the morning call and assignments of who's doing what, loading weapons, who's going to gas up the cars. No, none of that particular thing. We are talking about basic behavior on the streets, and that is the kind of thing that judges do all the time.
Consent all the time.
Other degrees are imposed on police to conform to basic standards, and compliance hearings with great frequency across America. Seventh Circuit is out of touch on this. And I'm almost wondering if they don't understand, again, the day-to-day operations of law enforcement.
Yeah. The other thing that this smacks of to me, Jim, and it places in sharp relief the absurdity of the administration's position when it comes to SNAP benefits in context of all of this other activity. Anywhere else, when it comes to the powers of the executive branch, the Article II branch, it is the powers are nearly unlimited. It is the unitary theory of the executive. They're plenary powers. We can do whatever we want. Of course, we don't have to respect court orders. This is our view that the executive branch gets to do whatever the hell it wants, fire tens of thousands of unionized employees that have protections, legal protections for their jobs, no problem. Article 2 powers, plenary authority, right? Deploy National Guard's troops to states when their governors haven't asked for it and when there is facially, objectively no active rebellion trying to overthrow the U.S. government. Fine, no problem. Issue an executive order withdrawing birthright citizenship, though it is enshrined in our Constitution. No problem. It's the executive branch. We can do whatever we want. Collect money from private individuals with business before federal agencies to fund a vanity project ballroom. No problem. We can do what we want. Take a $400 million jet from Qatar, despite the emoluments clause. Sure, no problem. Fire thousands of workers during a shutdown, even though that's never been done and is not legally required and it is in fact legally verboten. Sure, no problem. It's the executive branch. But all of a sudden, when it comes to feeding Americans, oh, yes, oh my goodness, there are these technical things about appropriations and allocations, and we can't possibly do that. Give me a break. The reason the government exists is to protect the health, safety, and welfare of citizens, of the people in this country, and this government wants nothing to do with that. It wants to serve, protect only those people who voted for this particular administration. And that is not what a functioning democracy is made of. Let's take a quick call. We got Ollie from the Northwoods. Please say hello to Jim and what you got for us.
Ollie, how are you?
Actually, I just wanted to catch you before your next gentleman from Russia comes on. And
yes,
I would like you to, if you would, ask him how he felt when the last un-Putin-esque TV station went off the air. I cried that night when I watched them leave the air, and I just wondered how they felt there.
Yeah, he actually contributes to a lot of outlets that are not Kremlin-controlled, so he will definitely have something to say about that, Ali. I will be sure to ask him about that, as well as what the defunding and closure of the Voice of America, Radio Free America, means for those that fight authoritarians everywhere in this world. When we come back, we're going to review a couple of other court cases where this administration lies on the reg. We discuss next with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel and you, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay with us.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. If you're looking for honest talk, real stories, and straight-up news that matters to you, tune in to The Rick Smith Show. We're digging into the issues that affect your job, your family, your future. Join me weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network because your voice deserves to be heard. That's The Rick Smith Show, heard weeknights at 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Dan Hagen.
My dad shot some pheasants for my mom on date number 2 or 3, and she was she did not like that. So that was the end of his hunting career.
Okay.
He also sold his motorcycle for the engagement ring. I wish I could have met him back then. Now he's a boring man doing Wordle and the mini crossword every morning.
And still kicking your butt in the parking.
Yeah.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses. For free, find a mentor today at score.org.
Daylight saving time ends this weekend. Don't forget to set your clocks back 1 hour before you go to bed Saturday night. Fall back and enjoy an extra hour of rest. A message from your local Civic Media radio station. You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report, right here on 107.7 WRCE.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Everybody, I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined for the balance of this hour by former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. You can find his fine work on Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 across this network. He hosts a little program called Amicus, a law review. Check it out. I try to listen whenever I've got the time on Saturday mornings, and I'm game for more politics. You know, sometimes I need a little breather on the weekend. Jim, I wanted to talk about the fact that I have lost count of the number of judges that have either basically held the government in contempt, held the government in contempt, found that the government has engaged in active misrepresentations of facts. They are now approaching sanctions in different cases. In the case we were just talking about, this is the National Guard case and the use of force case out of Illinois. The judge is finding that they're violating rulings. They violated the most notable one, sort of the first one, was when a Reagan-appointed judge had ordered the Trump administration to turn around the planes, and they didn't do so. The lying is going on in so many different places. The flouting of our separation of powers is going on in so many different places and cases by all different kinds of agencies. But I came across some reporting that I thought was pretty extraordinary in the audacity of the claims, the ease with which they are refuted, but the fervency with which the Trump administration refuses to give up the obvious lies. And it is in one case in particular, that I think would be morally appalling to virtually every single American. Whatever you may think about how or whether Donald Trump should have agreed with the Taliban to exit Afghanistan, whether you think Joe Biden botched the exit, regardless of any of that, what is indisputable is that thousands of Afghanis and their families assisted U.S. troops, were translators, guides, putting themselves and every single person in their family in extraordinary peril. That is not in dispute. We were there for 20 years and would have lost more American lives. It would have been a greater disaster without the bravery and courage and sacrifice of these Afghanis. Many thousands of them are here now as refugees in the United States. And now the Department of Homeland Security is seeking to revoke their legal status and deport them back to the now Taliban-controlled Afghanistan. There are accounts of one particular case that is moving forward in an immigration court Again, this man has not been accused of any crime. He's here, has legal refugee status, and they are trying to revoke that and deport this man back to Afghanistan, where, by his own testimony, he believes he's nearly certain to be killed by the Taliban. Why? Because he studied at an American university, literally the American university that had a satellite campus in Afghanistan. It's now closed. Why? For a whole set of reasons. His brother also assisted U.S. troops, was a translator for them, which puts a target on his back as well. By the way, when he was first detained, the agents that, quote, arrested him, detained him, told him that his immigration documents had lapsed. That was a lie. Assistant Homeland Security Secretary Trisha McLaughlin called this man an illegal and unvetted. That was a lie. He's been vetted for over 4 or 5 years by the State Department, responded in full to every inquiry, sat for lengthy interviews. In his case, government attorneys argued that the Taliban have allowed the institution, the American University's satellite campus, and this nonprofit that worked to help Afghanis, that those institutions continue to operate and the Taliban doesn't have an antagonistic posture towards them. Those things are verifiable lies. There is no satellite campus of American University there. It's now a Taliban-operated school. Called the Afghan International Islamic University. Yes, that is not the American university. The nonprofit has closed. Its former office in Afghanistan is now run by the Taliban. And at the hearing, the government lawyers tried to say that the Taliban never targeted this guy before he escaped, so he should have no reason to fear it now, which is both a lie. He was targeted. And, oh, by the way, when he escaped, the Taliban did not have complete control of Afghanistan like it does now. Jim, why are courts, why is the Seventh Circuit, why is the Supreme Court not standing up to clear, I can't even call it problems telling the truth. These are intentional, knowing lies that are being told by government attorneys. Why is this going unchecked, seemingly?
We are fabricating things in court. We're misleading the court. We're dissembling all those words about how we're behaving. Again, in any other administration, Republican or Democrat, an oath of office at a minimum to be honest, to be forthright, and that's not what you're getting here. I wonder again if those go back to the instruction given two department attorneys by this fellow named Emil Beauvais. I won't say it again on the air, but basically telling lawyers that if you want to, go ahead and tell a judge to take a flying leap. And everything else flows from that. That's the concern. That's the profound problem with the Department of Justice today.
And to be clear, the legal standard for asylum as a refugee is that you must establish a well-founded fear. Even just a 10% chance, this has been the standard established by the Supreme Court 40 years ago. Why would you send to a certain death the Afghanis that risked their lives and their families' lives to help U.S. troops for 20 years? It is shameful, and it also is riddled with lies. We'll talk about other lies being told by Russian media with Yuri Rashkin.